Start. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast, where three friends fly into space and are hit by cosmic radiation and gain special mutated powers. As always, I am your burnt face host, Zach.
I am your stretchy co-host, Zach.
I am your rock monster, Steven.
And we're back for a brand new week. Hooray. Welcome back, guys. Yay. Technically, this isn't even my show. It's Zach's show.
You pretty much stole the whole host thing.
Like, I don't know when that happened.
I want to say it was like around 15.
Like, you started doing all the notes, and then that became my job.
I remember there was a time where there was the second interview with John? It was the first or second interview with John, and I'm like, it's my show. I claimed control again, and then that just died like two episodes later.
Yeah. But you're like the producer and the seducer.
I'm just here for comic relief.
Yeah.
I'm the one who makes this show happen and also fucks it up sometimes.
I'm also here for random references.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know when everything transitioned over.
When the Fire Nation attacked.
Probably. Can't wait for that eclipse to happen this month.
A coworker of mine asked me if I was going to drive to Wyoming to see him. Like, no,
my coworker asked me enough. The exact same thing.
I don't care enough.
He took the day off to drive up with his friend up to Wyoming to see it.
Oh, I took the day off to attack the Fire Nation when they can't use their bending powers.
Smart move.
Yeah.
But little do we know that they planned for that.
Yeah.
They knew.
Goddamn Fire Lord Ozai.
I mean,
damn you, Mark Hamill.
Pretty fucking obvious.
So this week's intro is, of course, a Fantastic Four related reference. I went doomy, you went fantastic-y, and you went grimy thingy. Ben Grimm the thing. And
I
thought you were going for Human Torch.
I thought you went like the bad Human Torch from the DC thing.
Oh yeah, where all of Hank Henshaw's friends just
die horrible deaths.
They die the Fantastic Four way. So it's really relevant to bring this up because this week Newsarama released an article about the legacy of the Fantastic Four. And looking at everything, you know, Fantastic Four was Marvel's first comic. Before there was a Spider-Man, before there were the X-Men, you had the Fantastic Four. And with Marvel Legacy approaching, where Stan Lee is like, yeah, we want everything to return back to basics, there still is no Fantastic Four.
Rip.
There hasn't been one since 2015. So in this article, Jonathan Hickman's talking about the Fantastic Four, stating that not only because my personal experience is that it's not true when he's referring to the disconnect between the audience and the Fantastic Four.
Also, I just want to preface, this is a long-ass quote,
yeah.
So brace yourselves.
Not because my personal experience is that there is a disconnect between the audience and the Fantastic Four, but the idea behind the conceit is that the core concept is somehow broken, which is nonsense. Family, future, and exploration are timeless, universal concepts. Sure, they can be nostalgic, but they don't have to be. That's really the brilliance of a lot of the early Marvel characters. They were created by guys wrapping both arms around the timeless themes. There are some exceptions to this, of course, but for the most part, almost everything Marvel owns is highly malleable and easily exploitable. I'd argue execution is the mission critical element necessary for a Marvel book to succeed. Fantastic Four is no different. So the light of this news is that, you know, we're, 2 months away from Legacy at this point? Maybe 1 month?
Was it October or September?
And
it was October.
They've announced like a Marvel one-shot-esque thing that features Human Torch and Ben Grimm, the thing. But Reed Richards is still dicking off in space with Sue, Valerie.
Legacy or Generations? Because Legacy's already started.
The Legacy one-shot issue.
Well, the one-shot issues have started already.
Well, that's Generations that started, not Legacy.
It's Legacy.
Really?
Generations is the single book event that's going to come after Secret Empire.
I think you have them flipped, because Generations started this week with the time-traveling heroes meeting their other iterations.
I thought it was Legacy that started this week.
No. Because last week, Marvel Generations, The Incredible Hulk came out.
Right, I thought it was Marvel's Legacy.
No, Legacy is different. Hulk. Legacy starts when Secret Empire ends.
This is the same. Marvel Generations started this week.
Yeah.
Well, they're lying. Everyone's lying.
With Bruce Banner and Amadeus Cho.
Everyone's lying.
Because Marvel Legacy starts with the Avengers 1 million BC one shot.
Everyone's lying.
by Jason Aaron and Asad Ribic, I think.
Although, you know, looking this up, I do see a very interesting question from Amp. How the hell is Odin wielding Mjolnir?
You have to read the one shot to find out.
I mean, he created Mjolnir
right. For Thor.
For Thor.
Specifically.
But Thor's not even alive yet.
Dun, dun, dun. Like I said, my favorite joke for Ragnarok is that he realized Mjolnir was inside of him all along.
Is it just going to be like a Scott Pilgrim thing where like Mjolnir just pops out of his chest?
Well, we see him like covered in lightning. Anyways, getting back to the Fantastic Four.
Thor gains some
Hickman goes on to say that I think it's pretty common knowledge at this point that Marvel isn't publishing Fantastic Four because of their disagreement with Fox. While it bums me out, I completely understand because, well, it isn't like they're not acting out of cause. Fox needs to do a better job.
He's been just firing shots at everybody.
Yeah.
Like he does.
Fantastic Four didn't need to leave the Marvel Universe. The kind of thinking runs contrary to everything I believe in as a professional storyteller. It comes from a place of manipulation where an attempt is made to make the reader desire something through denial. It's hacky. It's suboptimal. It's all the central tenet of all shitty dating advice. If you want someone to care about a book, write a story they care about. And it's really interesting because leading up to Secret Wars, you had two different Fantastic Four books running. You had the main story written by Hickman, and then you had the Ultimate Universe, the Future Foundation, written by Hickman, leading into Avengers and everything else. So it's kind of, it makes sense for him to be upset at everything.
This was his baby for a while. Like, if you think about it, like he cared about these characters. He was like one of the, I want to say he was probably the last person who truly cared about the Fantastic Four the way he did in terms of like as a writer.
Probably. It's like even in the same sense that DC is essentially writing a Fantastic Four story right now.
Mm-hmm.
It shows kind of like, well, if Marvel's not going to do it, we're going to try it.
We'll do our version.
Yeah. And it's such a bummer because Fantastic Four as a whole remains so important because you still have characters like Johnny Storm running around.
Is he still with the Inhumans or is he?
No, he and Medusa just broke up.
Oh no.
So
I thought he was with like Sunspot or something.
He was there to train Sunspot, but he was dating Medusa. He's Spectacular Spider-Man right now with Zarsky's.
I thought run. Beast was dating Medusa.
Was he?
Yeah. It was Beast and Medusa.
Beast is a homewrecker.
Because they were having a thing. And then I thought Johnny was in a relationship with. Pretty sure it was Beast who was dating Medusa.
I don't know.
Because they were a thing. And
I just know Medusa kicked him out most recently. They've won over that in Infamous Iron Man, I think. You know, the other Fantastic Four character that's not even going by his Fantastic Four name. Bleeding Cool actually ran like this really weird article. Again, take it with a grain of salt. But like once, you know, Secret Empire or Secret Wars and everything else. And after the total bummer that was Fan4Stick, one of the head people at Marvel was telling everyone to take down all of the Fantastic Four, like posters and stuff, and kind of remove the Fantastic Four identity out of Marvel. Even in Marvel Puzzle Quest right now, the Bombastic Bagman no longer has the four on his chest, like his character icon. It's really weird and it's just totally strange. But at the same time, why do you want to advertise your competitor if your competitor is going to shit the bed?
Right. I mean, the last. Is this the last thing you added there, the last line from Hickman?
Yeah.
Quote, Disney probably needs to buy Fox, which... That was my... I was joking with you last night about, like, what if Marvel's secret plan for Phase 5 is they use all the money they make from Phase 4 and just straight up buy back the Fantastic Four?
You can only hope.
Because we have no idea what they're doing after Phase 4.
Yeah, and a lot of people's hopes were like, you know, when Tony sold
Avengers Tower
in Spider-Man Homecoming, it's the beginning of the movie. It's okay. A plot point. Zach still hasn't seen it.
Nope.
But everyone was sitting there. It's like, yeah, it's going to be Oscorp, of course. But what if it was the Baxter Building that takes over Avengers Tower? And everyone's like, dude, we can cross our fingers all we want, but it's not going
to
happen.
And then there was me who was an ass, and was like, yeah, Baxter Building needs to be the Baxter Building. Bruce Wayne.
Or the other famous Baxter from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Baxter Stockman?
Yeah.
Who turns himself into a fly? Except in the new goddamn movies, thanks, Michael Bay.
Or that time he turned himself into just a head on a robot.
But why did Baxter Stockman not turn himself into a fly? He made Bebop and Rocksteady, but he didn't turn himself into a fly man. This is bullshit, Michael Bay.
They ran out of CGI, and they didn't think it was worth it.
I heard, like, most of that movie was all right.
Which one? The first one or Out of the Shadows?
The second one?
Out of the Shadows. With Bebop and Rocksteady?
Yeah.
But he... Baxter Stockman has one big thing. He turns himself into a fly through his own genetic experimentation. And they didn't do it.
You know, that's like the Fantastic Four existing. And then Marvel's not doing it right now.
Yeah. I still remember when there was a giant deal on the internet that they killed Johnny Storm.
Yeah, and he didn't actually die.
He was just trapped in the trapped in the other world for a while.
Yeah, he was trapped in the negative zone. He sent everyone else through the portal and then like went nuclear Nova style. And then that's when they were like, we're going to convert ourselves to the Future Foundation. Wear white and black costumes and Spider-Man's going to join us again, which is one of my favorite runs.
Or remember when Reed Richards built the fucking prison in the negative zone for Civil War? You know, one of the most critical plot points of that series.
The most out of character moment for any of the characters in that one event.
Yeah, but it was the whole thing. I was just like, okay, Tony Stark's a dick. I'm going to go find Steve now.
Yeah.
And then came the Illuminati.
Yep.
You got to admit, like, towards the end of everything with the Fantastic Four, Hickman did such a wonderful job turning Secret Wars into a Reed Richards story. Like the,
I mean, and, yeah, that's what it was. It was a Fantastic Four story at the end.
As Brevert said, it's the last Fantastic Four story for now, which is absolute bullshit. Like, again, I'm really upset that we're still not getting it. Until the point Fox can make a decent Fantastic Four movie is the point we're going to get the comics again. Because, I mean, look at the success of Deadpool. We had like 3 or 4 different Deadpool books. We have Spider-Man, Deadpool,
just don't think Marvel's ever going to stop. I don't think they're going to ever stop printing Deadpool because it always sells.
Yeah, but even like, you know, the X-Men are selling really well right now because the X-Men movies are doing well. That's why we have Resurrection and Gen X and everything, and why Old Man Logan's still around for some reason. It's terrible that the media plays such a big role into Marvel's comic process because you have these fanboys like myself that just want the characters, just want the intrigue, just want the adventures, and I'm not getting that.
It's them trying to pander.
It is.
It's not fully their fault. It's partially the consumer's fault as well. Of they don't explore anything outside of, oh, here's Deadpool. I like the Deadpool movie. I'm only going to read Deadpool.
You can't blame them.
I can't blame them, but it's
marketing.
It's a catch 22 of we're not going to like. Marvel's going to pander to the movie-watching audience because the movie-watching audience only buys certain things that Marvel puts out, so Marvel's going to keep putting that out.
And it's an untapped audience. That's their whole goal is, hey, you watch the movie, now go buy the other stuff.
Just like when Guardians 2 was coming out, and they're like, Baby Groot.
Yeah, Baby Groot everywhere.
Let's see. Guardians, when that Volume 2 came out, there was Guardians of the Galaxy, the comic, that took place after Civil War, with the core movie team. Then you had the old school like artist and writer who did like a Mission Breakout miniseries. And then there was also Guardians of the Galaxy one shot. And then the Baby Groot comic.
Well, and then there was Rocket, Raccoon, and Groot.
And Rocket had like 3 different relaunches this year. That was
weren't they gonna relaunch the series as it was still going on? Like a new number one was coming out as another issue was ending or something.
Number one came out after 3 issues.
So dumb.
Yeah.
Well, and it was them trying to explore, like, all right, they liked Guardians. What if we do just Star-Lord by himself?
That was a great series.
It was, but it was a great series for people who read comics regularly. For those who just went to see Guardians, they're like, all right, I like Star-Lord, but where's Drax? Where's Groot? Where's Rocket? Where's Gamora?
Yeah.
I beg to differ. I feel like that's more of a... Yes, Guardians would do better just because it's more recognizable, but at least for me, the way I view teams is I pick a character that I... Or not necessarily pick one, but there's always a character that I prefer over all of them, and I go and read their solo book because I want more of that character.
Zach is like, Jessica Cruz, I'm picking her. She's the only one. I'm reading everything about with her in it now.
Pretty much. And it, granted, she was only in like $2.
It doesn't help that Star-Lord, you needed to have a general idea of what happened in Civil War to understand why that series was happening.
Yeah.
So if someone just went and saw Guardians 2 and picked up Star-Lord and be like,
Why is he on Earth?
Where's the rest
bartender?
Of the team?
My God, his abs though. Yeah.
There is this one Tumblr blog post that I read. It's like, it's my fault that Black Panther World of Wakanda got canceled. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. I'm going to read this because it's such a really interesting clickbaity headline. And it's about this person who's like, I worship diversity in comics, but I am part of the problem where I can wait 6 months for the trade to come out because I like having a collected single thing instead of, you know, going to my comic store every month and end up spending more money than the single trade. And I'm like, you know, that's a fascinating point. And I think this is really
Greg Miller talked about that in his show. He's like, I love comics, but I'm part of the problem because I buy digital and trades.
Yeah. And, crap, what was it? I know as I say this, someone out there is probably going to shake their head because I always talk about how much I love DC's stuff. But right now with DC exploring the realm of like, all right, we're just going to release these graphic novels first to see if there's interest. And then if there's interest in the graphic novel itself, maybe we do a follow-up series in floppies and then build it back up to a graphic novel. Because that's the only reason Midnighter came back. Midnighter undersold during the DCU issues 1 through 12. And then when the trade came out, everyone freaked out, bought tons of the trades. And that's why when Rebirth happened, we got Midnighter and Apollo as a follow-up. It's like the trade sales were so good that they released another volume of that.
Do you think it's a problem with binge culture and how everybody, they don't want to wait week to week to get, or not even week to week, month by month to get the next part of the story? They just want to read it all in one sitting now?
And I actually do that because Gabe from Thinking Outside the Long Box is telling me about this, where he gets his comics every week, but lets certain ones stack up
so he can get a full story.
And I do that. Like, I make sure to read all my bi-weekly stuff every single time I go.
Bi-weekly is not too bad because I usually don't forget what happened in the last issue. It's like, oh yeah, there's another issue of Green Lantern's out this week. I remember what happened last time.
Yeah, with things like Batman and Nightwing, I read those almost immediately. But I let something like Batgirl stack up for a couple weeks because I'm like, I know I'm going to read this. I love Barbara Gordon, but I want to have that, like you said, it's almost that binge culture.
But that doesn't necessarily contribute to the problem, though, because you're still buying the books when they come out.
I just have a problem.
Yeah, we all have a problem. I finally caught up on my pull list after being behind a month and a half. I'm so happy.
I am so far behind.
I can read Sunstone this week.
You guys haven't even seen inside my drawer of backlog stuff.
Oh, the stack by my bathroom, like, that's all stuff I've read over the last 2 months. I need to put it away. You haven't seen my
stack. Because it's currently in 3 different places.
Welp.
In my desk, on the table by the couch, and then in bags on the windowsill. Because I'm that far behind on everything.
All right, here's what you got. You got to put the anime away.
Take a break.
Blasphemer.
Just take an afternoon, read through like 15 things.
But there's so many good summer simuldubs. And there's a new episode of something every day of the week.
They're going to be there. They're going to be there later.
You say that, but Verve likes to take their stuff off the Funimation page quickly. what's that? You're only on episode 9 and we have 3 more episodes? Nah. We got to make room for fall simuldubs.
Yeah. But, you know, what was the original point behind
Fantastic Four?
Yeah, Fantastic Four's sales numbers were always good and well. But again, it is that pandering to the audience. Like, okay, Fox just made a super shitty Fan4Stick movie. And we don't want to show this. Like, we don't want to be associated with this because it's almost like, okay, Fantastic Four movie sucked. I'm dropping Fantastic Four now, even though they're unrelated. because that's part of that internet culture.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't think comic fans are that conceited.
It's that Reddit culture where people say, I'm going to drop it now. And then some editor is like, oh shit, this dude is going to drop it.
No, what I see more in Reddit culture is, this is why I'm leaving this, or leaving this game, or
they're
stop reading
leaving.
This book.
They're still there.
It's like, all right, you don't need to leave a Dunzo manifesto every time you stop.
It's like those guys that were boycotting Call of Duty on Steam.
Oh yeah, or this is a little tangity, but in the Overwatch pro community, there's like all these high level players that are like, yeah, I'm kind of done with the game right now, and everyone's like, oh, this is such a problem because all these high level pros are leaving. It's like, well, I mean, there's no tournaments going on except the Overwatch World Cup, and majority of them aren't playing in it. So, but they all leave like a giant post about why they're leaving. It's like, hey, blah, 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 the game's not fun anymore. It's like, okay, take a break, bro.
That's why I can't watch Twitch streamers that only play one game, because I can see they're getting bored. That was like my big problem watching people play Smite, was eventually they got bored and I got bored.
So, yeah, majority of them you can tell, but some of them you like still legitimately enjoy it.
I can kind of agree with that, of watching one person play the same game over and over and over. The only one that I can watch play the same game over, I think it's Biscuit49, is because he always speedruns Kingdom Hearts 2. And just watching when he gets that new speedrun or finds a new exploit or something.
Well, I feel like speedrunning culture is almost entirely different than just watching something.
Because that's the whole point, is they just keep playing that
right.
same
game. And that's why I can watch him play Kingdom Hearts 2 constantly, even if he's just doing like a casual run through, of like he'll get to a part and be like, huh, I wonder if I can do this, and finds a new exploit to use in his next speedrun.
Fair game.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no, again, it's interesting just to see how people absorb entertainment and then how a larger corporation like Marvel views that entertainment in the same way. Like I said, we're going to talk about DC as much as we can because we're just so, like, DC is holding us like a Muppet. Like, their hand is so far up us and controlling our every word. It's just impossible
to escape
right now.
If everything just wasn't so damn enjoyable.
That's my problem with Rebirth. Everything is good, and I hate reading. I hate spending so much money on it.
Well, not everything. There are some.
There's
misses.
Been a couple that are just like,
I'm surprised Superwoman is still going on. Like, I thought after Superman Reborn, they were going to stop it, but like, actually, no. Lana Lang's costume. Not Lana Lang.
Lois Lane.
No, not Lois. It's still Lana. I can't remember Lana's last name. Well, Lana's still like, hey. This suit still has resident energy of Superman, so I could still be Superwoman, and it's not killing me anymore. I'm like, oh, that's a great way to explain it. All right.
Sure. Why not?
And it's like in the same vein, like the latest arc of Trinity should be what Justice League is. Like, it's the most enjoyable team up I've read in Justice League comics since Rebirth started. Nothing against Hitch, but his
We're glad
story
he's
isn't
done.
For me. Yeah. And Hitch is just like, oh my god, like, oh my god, look, it's the children of Barry Allen and Jessica Cruz. But wait, in the Flash comic, we see the children of Barry Allen and Iris West. Continuity, please.
Doesn't exist.
It's like, oh, two Green Lantern kids. They must be Guy's kids with Ice. Nope, Barry and Iris's kid, or Barry and Jessica's kid. Why?
That I'm more invested in the Barry and Iris kids thing than even Barry and Jessica's kids.
It's the Fire Emblem anime trope right now where the kids travel back in time. It's like, it's your fault, our future sucks. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna play Fire Emblem Conquest apparently, so I'm just gonna flip my DS open or whatever. Anyways, tangential. One of the cool things that came out this week is that as we're building up to the fall with all the new hit series for action and detective comics like Lonely Place of Living, but we also get the Oz Effect, and we
that
see the
Superman one is creepy as fuck.
Which one?
The one where it goes from the Superman symbol to the bodies.
That is terrifying.
Hope Oz. And everyone right now has been like speculating who Oz is, because everyone's like, is Ozymandias too much of a cop out now? And it's really interesting because
I think it would throw everybody off if it was someone that nobody's guessed yet.
On CBR, everyone's like, there was a forum that's like, yeah, you know what? Oz is actually Superboy Prime.
That's what my coworker and I were talking about this morning, is like, it would make sense if it was Superboy Prime, because if he has the ability to just punch a universe, why can't he fuck with things?
So the theory for Superboy Prime is that he just wants to fix the universe and bring everyone back to their original status quo. That's why he forced the two, forced in quotes, the two Supermen to fuse back together. That's why he was gathering these like omnipotent beings like Mixleplick, Prophet, Doomsday,
Drake.
Yeah. Future Tim Drake, supposedly, because the end of Batman Beyond in the DCU era, we see him disappear in a blue light.
That's true.
So, like, everyone's like, oh my god, Tim Drake must have met himself when he escaped the first time. And I'm like, huh. One of the other big theories on Reddit this week, or this past week, was that it was Jor-El who, because it's like, I raised you better, Clark. And I'm like, oh, what if he did disappear? And one of those lenticular covers that came out shows Jor-El disappear in a blue light. So, I mean, that kind of rules it out.
But does it?
But exactly.
Like I could see that as like a, maybe he got blasted into another, like in between dimensions sort of thing, and saw the universe. Like, I'm gonna fix this real quick.
Now, the biggest theory that came out this week was from a preview image of like the latest one, for like the furthest solicited comic for Oz Effect. Now, what color is Oz's cloak?
Green.
There's a lot of characters associated with the color green, right?
We have a whole core about it.
So the Action Comics, like the next issue, is called The Fall of Lex Luthor. So a lot of people, and then in the cover for this Action Comics, I can't remember what issue it is, it shows like the hood blow black slightly, and it shows a bald head under a green cloak. And I'm like, no fucking way. Because if Rebirth was drawing everyone back to their original status quo, bringing Lex Luthor back to his villain status as the greatest mind in the universe, the one who's trying to unite all of the different halves, uniting the Superman, uniting himself with the masquerading Lex Luthor Superman from Action Comics.
Well,
like,
I mean,
it makes some weird sense.
It also does, because I don't know if anything happened after that they, or they ever explain it. But at the end of Darkseid War, we see Lex sitting on the throne of Apocalypse.
No,
that gets followed up in that got followed up in Action Comics actually 2 arcs ago.
When doesn't he say he's like, it's time to take back my throne or something? Like,
kind
doesn't
of
he go back.
He is hunted down by these interdimensional assassins who say Lex Luthor will bring about the end of the world, and I think it's maybe next arc they go back to Apocalypse. Or no, he and Supes already went back to Apocalypse to seat someone else on the throne at that point. Okay, so let me find this post. Sorry. But in that same vein, someone said that Supes, or the meeting of Mr. Oz and Lex Luthor will be the two, or Jeff Johns said this, that the meeting of Lex Luthor and Mr. Oz will be the meeting of the two greatest minds in the universe. So at someone was like, the two greatest minds, huh?
Lex Luthor and Lex Luthor?
Yeah. Maybe it was 1987?
I really hope actually, no, never mind. How does freaking Dr. Manhattan play into any of that then?
Like I said, Manhattan doesn't matter. He's not Endgame.
He's just God.
I'm assuming that this was hit, like, he created the universe, the current DC universe, and Mr. Oz is trying to usurp the God throne from him, essentially.
Yeah,
of like, I want this universe for myself.
All right, go look up Action Comics 987, which is part one of the Oz Effect, and it has that cover that I'm talking about with the green cloak and the bald head.
It's a bit on the nose there.
what if it is Osmond Dias?
He's
and after
bald.
Years of exposure to Dr. Manhattan, lost all his hair.
So this comes from user Craft Beer Goggles on Reddit.
It's a trusty source.
He says, unless I'm going crazy, I think the cover alone to Oz Effect or to Action Comics 987 spills the beans on who Oz is. We've been speculating he's Superboy Prime, the Time Trapper, who's also Superboy. No, that's Batman, I think. Time Trapper from Countdown to Final Crisis. John or Pa Kent. But the bald head clearly points to one option, Lex Luthor. A few days ago, Bleeding Cool ran the story, and this would actually be major spoilers if it turns out to be true, that Mr. Oz would be revealed to be the pre-crisis Jor-El trying to unite all the different timelines and iterations of Superman over the years, using the powers of Dr. Manhattan to accomplish his goals. Now, this is still Mr. User Craft Beer Goggles. Now, this scoop would be so wildly out of left field. I initially thought it was crazy. It had to be true, and I was intrigued. But seeing 987 this morning has now changed my thinking. I'm wondering if maybe Bleeding Cool got it half right. What if Mr. Oz is piecing together all the different Supermans across the various DC timelines, but doing it out of malice, as part of some greater scheme? What if the whole DC Rebirth / Doomsday Clock story is, at the end of the day, a story about Superman and Luthor's relationship?
Friendship. That could make sense, but I don't like the line, the bald head clearly points to Lex Luthor. There can be more than one bald person in the universe.
No, there can't, Steve.
It's not like it can only be one. Go bald.
Can you name another bald superhero?
Off the top of my head, no. But I could probably find you one.
Probably.
Or even a bald supervillain.
User RPG0 says, on one hand, it would make sense. Rebirth is about turning to...
Fuck, I can't think of one.
About a return of basics while telling new stories, and bringing back the original evil Luthor fits in with that. On the other hand, I feel so bad for New 52 Luthor if he's fused with him. The guy has tried his hardest to be a hero these past few years. It doesn't bode well that the next issue of Action Comics is titled Luthor's Last Stand. So, on one hand, I'm like...
Professor Charles Xavier.
How did none of us think that?
I don't know. Well, I was thinking DC strictly.
Professor Charles McMavier. And it's really cool. I think it'd be interesting. Not necessarily cool, because we even got the...
bald Marvel people.
We got the original Hank Henshaw back, too. Like, he gets this gem from Superman's lair and literally peels off his skin to show the cyborg part underneath it. But Clark was like, no, I stopped this. I saved you from becoming this. And then... he actually has his pre-crisis or pre-Flashpoint memories along with Radicator. So it's really weird to see all these different blending timelines going on.
Destroy.
I've got it. Master Roshi.
Not a DC character still.
Or is he?
And
no.
Even then,
Saitama.
In Action Comics this week.
Sadly, no.
He could be whatever he wants to be.
In Action this week, we had Zod return, and he only wanted to get in the Phantom Zone to bring back his wife, Ursa, and their child. And that kind of bums me out, because the son of Zod becomes Lois and Clark's adopted kid, but because the New 52 and pre-Flashpoint versions merged, the timelines got really screwy, because for some reason, like what Mixelplex said, everything revolves around Superman in some way, shape, or form. Which is really interesting, because, you know, DC is still writing about their first ever superhero. Why not Marvel?
Oh!
Everything should revolve around the Fantastic Four again. Someone else said it's the original Superman.
Oh my god. There's
Boy
one,
Scott Superman, oh lord.
There's one person we never even thought about who could be the bald head. Because it just shows the top of the chrome dome, right?
Yeah.
Alfred Pennyworth.
Alfred has a bolt. Oh, yeah. Top of the chrome dome. Alfred's trying to fix the DC universe.
The Long Con. The Long Con by Pennyworth. He was the first ally.
I don't know. Like I said, it's something interesting to think about. And then moving forward into that, talking about all the different realities, we get our first look at the Red Death?
No, just the Dark Knights.
Yeah, the Dark Knights, but we also see Red Death's one-shot cover, and we also see the Murder Machines one-shot cover, which features an armless Hal Jordan.
Oh, yeah. Armless?
Yep. Armless.
His right arm is gone.
So everyone's like, that has to be a mistake. I'm like, dude, that's made by Jason Fabik. He doesn't make mistakes. So what Scott Snyder says about this is that all of these one-shots are Batman's nightmares of himself plucked from the dark multiverse. So it's really interesting to see, like, all the multiverses kind of convert, or at least these nightmare one-shots. It's like, this is what I could have become. It's the whole one bad day version of Batman. One bad day, I was fused with Cyborg and became a murder machine. One bad day, I was the Flash and became this. What, it's like all those apocalyptic things. Is like, what if Batman had the Speed Force and went rogue? What if Batman was an Amazonian and went rogue? What if Batman had the Doomsday Virus and went rogue? It's literally all of the nightmares. And I'm like,
it's like all of his contingency plans, except they're all him.
Yeah. And I'm so freaking excited to see the, because they haven't revealed one character yet. The Batman, the man who laughs. It's his, ooh, him and the Joker, that nightmare. And I just, the so penultimate. Yeah.
I just like to think, like, through all of these is just Batman doing the fusion dance with the Justice League. It's like, hey, Barry, come here. I want to show you something real quick. Put your hands like this and say fusion ha.
But they have to be similar height and similar power levels.
Batman can tone his power level down.
I can't wait, personally. Like, I think it'd be really cool.
Are these part of just the metal event as yes. a whole? Okay. So I will be getting them.
Yeah, it's like John was like, as I'm walking out the door, hey, what about metal? I'm like, yeah, just get me everything. I don't care.
Well, he asked me that too. He was like, so with the metal, do you want the one shots? You want the tie-ins? I looked at those like, well, I'm getting almost all of the tie-ins just already.
Give me
the one shots. If I'm missing anything, I'll pick up the tie-ins when I need them.
I think there's only two series on the tie-ins that I don't read. Suicide Squad and Green Arrow. So it's like, cool, I have part one and part two.
I know I'm not getting Suicide Squad. I can't remember what the other one was. There was one more on the list.
Nightwing, Teen Titans, and Green Arrow. Are those
three? Then I'm not getting Suicide Squad, and that's it.
There you go. I can't wait till Metal.
That's this month, isn't it?
Next week. Ooh. This week is Mr. Miracle. Yes. Next week is Metal.
It's gonna be excited.
Going on, moving forward. Dwayne McDuffie's estate sues over Milestone relaunch. And this is...
Yeah, they're not happy.
Yeah, this is really interesting to me. Because, what was it, 2015? Jim Lee was like, Milestone is coming back. Milestone 2.0. And then radio silence. And he just keeps saying, well, there's going to be something. Just wait. Just wait a few months for news, even sooner maybe. And the only character we've seen come out of it is Static in Young Justice. Because I guess he was part of a deal that was made beforehand. But Charlotte McDuffie, the widow of the late creator Dwayne McDuffie, has filed a lawsuit against the Revive Milestone Media for neglecting to include the McDuffie estate in the new venture. According to Variety, the lawsuit alleges that at the time of his death in 2011, after complications from a heart surgery, McDuffie owned 50% of Milestone Media, with Derek Dingle, the owner of the other half. Instead of buying out McDuffie's shares of the company, Dingle, along with Reginald Hudlin and Dennis Cohen, formed Milestone Media Company, LLC, dubbed Milestone 2.0. The company plans to use characters that McDuffie and his partners made famous, like Static Shock and Icon. You know his name is just Static, right? Static Shock was a TV show.
Yeah.
According to Hudlin, the idea for a Milestone relaunch originated when he met Dingle and Cohen at the former Marvel and DC writers' wake. So Charlotte McDuffie claims that she has met stalling and stonewalling tactics after inquiring about Milestone 2.0, and the new company is working with DC Comics to launch an imprint with the Milestone Heroes while also negotiating with other publishers, all while utilizing the intellectual property rightfully owned by Milestone without the compensation to McDuffie's estate. So, yeah, lawsuits.
You can't really blame her. It's pretty shitty.
Yeah, it's... This reminds me of like all the Jack Kirby and Bill Finger drama that went down, or Siegel. Like all these people made famous for creating superheroes and received nothing in return. So I can't really blame her, but at the same time, I'm like, I wonder if this is why Milestone hasn't come back yet.
It probably is.
Yeah. Just lawsuits, paywalls, and...
They don't want to talk about it.
Apparently some comic shops are doing midnight release for Metal Number 1. John.
Well, he probably won't be.
Steve. Conversation behind.
I'm just looking at all the cool stuff.
Yeah, and Scott Snyder even said he's going to call comic book shops for midnight release parties.
John, do it.
So, yeah, it's pretty shitty, and I'm like, I don't even know what to say about this, because it's like, yeah, you know, you have the right to be upset. These are characters your husband helped create. And like I said, it reminds me of Jack Kirby and Bill Finger not getting credit for any of their work or not receiving any compensation for any of their characters. Mm-hmm. It also reminds me of that one artist recently who came out and said he's made more money off making KJ Beast than he has with Thanos so far with all the Marvel and DC movies. Jim Starlin? I think that sounds right.
Oh, look.
I don't know, man. At the same time, I'm kind of thankful this is happening because I'm like, yeah, I don't have to read more Static comics because I spend too much money already. That's a terrible thing to say.
Whoop, whoop.
Yes, Steve. Whoop, whoop.
Can't find the quote, but I think you're right.
Yeah. It's all about Jim Starlin.
He was the creator of Thanos, so I'll hold you to that one.
Okay. All right. I don't know. No. I thought that would be a little more interesting to talk about.
I mean, it's
really cut and paste.
Yeah. At the same time, yes, Milestone technically owns the characters now. It's more. It seems more. It's like a moral issue. I don't know. Maybe it is. See, the problem. I don't know. It's complicated. It seems. I don't know. I can't really formulate a proper thought on it.
I don't know legal speak. I'm a young,
man,
foolish 24-year-old. My parents wanted me to be a doctor, not a lawyer. I was the other Asian stereotype.
Okay, so reading again, it seems like Dingle is pretty much... since he didn't 100% own the entire company, that's McDuffie's widow's case.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean that makes sense. Like, yeah, she still technically owns half that company,
right?
Because he didn't buy it out. Just forming a new company doesn't.
Yeah, trying to bypass everything.
Yeah, I see what the guy was trying to do. Of hey, it's not Milestone, it's Milestone Media.
I'll look later.
So,
sorry,
it's a pretty shitty move, yeah. I would say.
Speaking of awesome moves, though,
yes.
Mr. Kieran Gillen, famous for Young Avengers, Wicked and Divine, Uber, not the vehicle driving company, but like the Nazi comic, and many other great things.
Potato, potato.
Is taking over Star Wars for Jason Aaron after issue 37. And that's after the supposed rumors that Jason Aaron's going to be taking over Avengers for Mark Waid. Because, yeah, Jason Aaron. Woo! Death of Mighty Thor! Yay, Jane Foster! Sadly. But we have to have the regular Thor back for the movie.
Oh, poor Jane.
Why can't there be more than one Thor? Wait, there is. Volstagg, the War Thor.
Instead of, you know...
Beta Ray Bill, the not really Thor, but kind of Thor. He's got the power of Thor, but...
Yeah, I can't believe they got a Beta Ray Bill cameo in the Ragnarok trailer. That really bummed me out that was all a Beta Ray Bill. His head is on a building. That's it.
His head was... Or the building was shaped like his head.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like Beta Ray Bill head.
Hashtag true comic fans would know. But with Kieran Gillen, Kieran's written several crossover stories. He helped write Vader Down. He helped write...
Screaming Citadel.
Screaming Citadel.
That was his like brainchild too.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to write a gothic horror Star Wars story.
It worked perfectly.
Yes. I was like, all right, let's see what you got. Oh, cool. Space vampires.
He also did the Star Wars Annual number 2, I think, which is about like an undercover rebel spy trying to rescue other rebel spies, but fails to do so. And then that rebel spy comes back later in Jason Aaron's Star Wars run as the antagonist. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Hashtag two Star Wars fans would know. But Kieran Gillen did an article with Newsarama, with Marvel.com. So, Kieran, how does it feel to be taking over the reins of this main Star Wars title after Jason Aaron's 37-issue run? Kieran replies, generally speaking, I like to think of myself as Palpatine, having successfully arranged a takeover of the once noble Republic and will now turn it into my evil hands. Jason has been reduced to a living on a swamp world and speaking in unusual syntax. Gillen triumphant, hail Gillen.
I love this man so much.
My lord.
He's such a troll.
Have you seen the new Zarsky variants?
Yes, I have.
It's like, all right, all you have to do is find a human reference. Let's pick Matt Murdock, and I'll teach you how to draw Matt Murdock. And then you erase all of these, and it's like, oh my god! Daredevil's Matt Murdock! I just feel like all of these people that shifted to indie and then are coming to Marvel mainstay stuff are just like, can I say this? Can I do this?
Why the fuck not?
What do you mean I can't say shit?
No, you gotta say hashtag @ star. Ampersand star.
Because we all know what they're saying.
It is a pound symbol, not a hashtag, sir.
I know. I did that for you.
You millennials.
Yeah.
And your hashtags.
I'm really interested.
Foot up your ass.
But the one thing I kind of dislike about the Star Wars title is that it's only between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back still. Granted, that's like 3-4 years in the timeline.
Is it really? Is there really that much time between them?
No. There's not that much time between. Are you talking Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope?
A New Hope between A New Hope and Empire.
Right. There's not that long of a time between those two.
Let's look it up.
I'd say maybe 6 months. Six Earth months.
6 Earth months. Hang on, I found the canon timeline.
Yeah, 3 years.
Ha ha! I am Star Wars trash. God, I hate myself.
There was a direct answer from Google. Like, it was one of those questions.
The fuck were they doing for 3 years?
Well,
they accomplished nothing in between.
Well, they accomplished a lot. They stole Star Destroyer. They fought space vampires, apparently.
Did they, or did that get erased from the timeline?
No, this is the new stuff that just happened.
Yeah, this is the new stuff that happened. They stole some TIE fighters, maybe? Who knows?
If they did, it does not show an Empire.
They did abandon Yavin. That was a plot point in Dr. Aphra. The rebel base right now, it's not even on Hoth yet. I don't know where they are because everyone's just been dicking around in space for the past 30 issues. And then every once in a while we get an Obi-Wan Kenobi issue, and that's like amazing. And then a Yoda issue occasionally. So it makes me wonder. I don't think Kieran Gillen's going to do those special little one shots like Jason Aaron did, but I would love to see Kieran Gillen take on an Obi-Wan story or a Yoda story.
That would be cool.
Because or even tell like those special like issue sevens, because the arc takes 6 things. I think the latest one was Yoda pre-Phantom Menace, even.
Damn.
Or pre-Clone Wars, because he even has like the old school little Jedi starfighter, like the one that's just a straight triangle arrowhead instead of the one with the fold-out wings. Yeah. I don't know. It was funny because I was talking to this girl at a HOJ and we were talking about Star Wars. She was talking about Star Wars when John was like, do you want Captain Phasma and Mace Windu? It's like, well, I don't really like either of those characters, but I'm Star Wars trash. So yes, I would like both of them. And I'm like, ha ha.
I know me too.
Yeah. That's when she was like, I'm never going to sell my comics. I'm like, I said the same thing. And then I saw how much 7-2 Eternity was going for on eBay. That was good. And John was like, yeah, I tried to buy cover price, you know, the price I sold to him out of the kindness of my heart. I'm like, thanks, John. You the best. So yeah, I really want to see more Empire stories though, or post Empire, because we have, let's see. Okay, I guess that's only
We're getting a story about how Vader built his lightsaber. What about Luke?
Luke Ray has the lightsaber.
After Empire. Yeah.
Fair game. Well, he finds Obi-Wan's journal.
Right, but he would still have to go track down Kyber crystals.
That's actually all at Obi-Wan's house. Obi-Wan
story. Just got some Kyber crystals sitting around.
It was actually like he went to Obi's old house and he had like a Star Wars kit. He had a lightsaber kit. It's like Gunpla. You just pull it out of the little plastic parts with your little clippers.
Gotta get it out of those sprue kits.
Vader getting his lightsaber was such a cool story. Like, I love Charles Soule. Like, Charles Soule writes such angry things constantly. And watching Vader get thrown off a cliff, shatter his leg, and then he's like, this robot's like, you'll never defeat the Jedi. And he's like, I already have. And then destroys the robot and repairs his body with the Force. God. I'm like, fucking metal. And then he's fighting the other Jedi. Yes.
It is metal. Yeah.
He's fighting the other Jedi, Master Ribbick, I think his name was, on top of like a dam. And he starts Force choking him. And then he starts causing the waters to rise. It's like, you don't have to do this. There are innocent people down there. Takes his lightsaber, gets off the dam. Water just floods and destroys the entire city. I'm like, that's Vader. That is actually Vader. That is
pure Vader.
That's not Anakin.
That's the one we know from A New Hope.
Yeah, and a lot of my favorite thing is what Kylo Ren is what Anakin Skywalker should have been. And I'm like, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Using an Andy Blanchard line right now.
I know, it's crazy. I never thought I would agree with him.
Only on Star Wars.
Dude, I love Star Wars. Why did you guys let me talk about it?
I don't know.
We had no choice.
Because we have to have someone come back from the future to stop you.
Like?
Cable.
What? Josh Brolin, Thanos.
And Cable, what?
Yeah, he's freaking yoked. Like,
yeah, he's...
He's massive.
My favorite combo is, though, oh god, Gordon Ramsay has come back from the future. He looks oddly like Gordon Ramsay.
It's Rotan!
I know, for real though, he looks pretty legit.
Not enough pouches. Everyone on the fucking internet has been saying that. I'm guilty of it too.
He has the robot eye, at least.
The red eye. Dude, I can't wait till they explain. It's like, all right, he sits Deadpool down, explains his backstory, and Deadpool has like a whiteboard. It's like, okay, what timeline are you from?
Who fucked who?
Which movie? Are you from Sophie Turner, or are you from... You know, just lampshading really hard.
Even like harder. Are you Sansa's timeline or?
One of the things I really like about the new Cable costume, they don't show his feet. So true to esque Rob Liefeld style, and he has plenty of pouches, but he has a teddy bear on his belt. That teddy bear is so goddamn important to the X-Men universe.
Zach. Is it?
Yes.
Explain.
I saw an article that makes more sense now. And they're like, is Cable's teddy bear a link to the X-Men universe?
It's so goddamn important.
Please explain. I don't know what the teddy bear means.
Let me get the whiteboard out.
Oh, fuck.
So what there's this story, X-Men story called the Messiah Complex.
Okay.
Where both Magneto's crew and the X-Men, I think it was Messiah Complex, but there was the first new mutant. She was the Hope, essentially. She was Hope to the X-Men universe. Because her literal name was Hope. It's kind of iffy on the details. She's regarded as the child of Jean Grey and Scott Summers in some fashion, even though it's one of those alternate timeline bullshits. But Hope is like one of the first new mutants to carry the X gene again, and Cable goes to rescue her. And Cable takes her into the future with him, and the next time we see Hope, she's actually like a matured teenager, I suppose. But one of the things that Cable gives to her, because, you know, Cable looks fucking scary with a metal arm and glowing red eye, he gives her the teddy bear.
Aww.
So it's like, someone's like, I don't know what's more intimidating. The Vector that's all customized and blinged out, the grenades on his chest, or the teddy bear. But Josh Brolin looks the part. I mean, hot shit, dude.
This probably means that filming's just starting then.
I think so, because last week was the first time we saw Domino in costume.
Mm-hmm. That fro, though.
I'm so excited. It's a bouncy fro. Okay. Yeah, it was the Messiah Complex. Fuck yeah. So this is after House of M. She's the first mutant born after House of M.
Okay.
So that's why she's so important.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense then.
Yeah, she has empathic power mimicry, so she can mimic anyone's power. Freaking OP. So her town was attacked by the purifiers and a time traveling Nimrod, and Hope and Cable manages to save Hope. According to Cable, the baby is a messianic figure destined to save both mutant and humankind. The purifiers and Bishop, however, recall a timeline in which Hope will become the mutant equivalent of the Antichrist and kill a million humans in an instant. This event, known as the 6-Second War, will turn humanity against mutants once again and lead into a new era of mutant persecution, creating the dark timeline in which Bishop was born in. So yeah, diverging timelines, Hope being the center of everything. But she is Hope.
Is Cable from the darkest timeline?
No, he's from the Age of Apocalypse timeline.
So not the darkest timeline.
Technically, Bishop probably would be.
Well, you just said that Bishop was born in that timeline.
No, Cable's from the Age of Apocalypse, and then Bishop is from the dark timeline.
Yeah, you said he was born in the dark timeline.
Yeah, Steve asked if Cable's from the darkest timeline.
Wait.
You're just the way you phrased your response was what you just said twice.
Yes. I'm just going to say yes.
Bishop does have a goatee, right?
Think so?
It fits the community darkest timeline. Oh, my God.
I was wondering when you were going to get there eventually. Where
everything was on fire. And they all grew goatees. Because it's the darkest timeline. The nega timeline, if you will.
I thought you were making a Star Trek reference for a bit. And then you said community.
Yeah. Because Community ripped off the Star Trek, the mirror universe of Star Trek, where Picard is fucking jacked and has a goatee.
It's the best, though.
So they riffed on that on Community, where after everything went to shit and everything was on fire.
Everything's on fire.
You know the gif where Troy walks in with the pizzas and everything's on fire and they're just hitting it with jackets. That causes the darkest timeline where Donald Glover loses an arm. Joel McHale loses his voice, has to speak through one of those robot voice boxes. And everyone, including the women, grow goatees. And I think Chevy Chase dies before he actually died in the show.
Okay. All right. And then the last big casting thing before we get to your trailer is... Ian McShane has been cast in the Hellboy reboot as Dr. Broom, Hellboy's adoptive father.
Nice.
I could see it working.
He's been on a roll lately. Like
I'd need to catch up on American Gods. I watched the first couple episodes and then fell so far behind.
Yeah. I mean, he's been like the perfect Mr. Wednesday. So I think he'd be an awesome caring father figure after being such a dick to Shadow. All right, Narcos?
Yes.
What's a narco?
It's a drug dealer. It's a Colombian drug dealer, to be specific.
It's about Escobar.
It was about Escobar.
Escobar.
Escobar, yes.
Do you know narc and narco mean the same thing?
What?
Like a narc, someone who rats out on the cops. Narc and narcos, they're the same thing. That's why the Mexican word is narcos. Or maybe the other way around, the English word
narcos
is narc.
Comes from narcotics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they're called narcos, is because they deal in narcotics.
Yes, but the first two seasons were about Pablo Escobar, were loosely based. I've heard some
mixed... Like the new Tom Cruise movie?
Oh my God, why do you always do this to me? Fuck. You always derail me.
Okay, so one season was about Pablo Escobar.
Yes, season one and two was... Season one was really like Pablo Escobar's rise, and then season two was his fall. It was a really well done show, in my opinion. It has Pedro Pascal, who's Agent Whiskey in the new Kingsman movie. It was
Oberon Martell.
Oberon, in Game of Thrones. He's gonna be the lead, it looks like, in this next season. To where they set it up in the second at the end of the second season, since everybody knows Pablo Escobar dies.
What?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
What's cool about the show is they use actual TV footage from like that time when cocaine trafficking was a huge issue. So like every now and again, it'll have like a narration from the main character and actual TV footage of like an event that just happened, or just usually it was like an event, a catastrophic event, to show like, hey, this is not dramatized. This actually happened, guys.
Okay.
Like, this is how fucked it was. I mean, I loved season one and two. It was just cool to see like this righteous man Pablo Escobar was, where he's like, I just want to help Colombia. Like, that's all I want to do. I want to help the poor with all this money I made selling cocaine.
Right.
So it's naturally, like, it's like he has righteous goals, but he is
morally ambiguous.
It's pretty much the whole power corrupts absolutely. Like, he pretty much goes on his own mission, from his self-proclaimed mission that he's going to...
Was it a mission from God?
Easy there, Blues Brothers.
Kind of. To himself, he would think so.
Or on a mission from God.
But yeah, now season three is pretty much continuing the story from where it ended at season two, where it's like, all right, now this new cartel, well, it's not really new, it was the... They showed him off in season two a lot, called the Cali Cartel, which pretty much took over everything. So then they became the largest cocaine trafficker. So it's following Agent Pena, who was in the first two seasons, and now this is his mission to stop them.
Do you ever think they're going to, like, keep going, like, migrating up? Like, they're doing a lot of Central America things, but, like...
I think it's still going to be based in Colombia.
Okay.
But the thing with the Cali Cartel was they were always trying to be hidden and run everything like a business.
Mm-hmm.
So Escobar was like, oh, it's clear that he's a drug dealer. But these guys, it's like, oh, they have this front. It's like, oh, no, it's just a business. We just own a bunch of pharmacies.
Okay.
So that's it's cool. Like these, now it's like a corporate.
And Narcos thing. Is a Netflix series, right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. I might check it out then.
I wonder it's if pretty they're good. Going to have a like special episode where they do travel north of the border. Maybe, southwest area. Maybe to New Mexico. Where they run into other drug dealers.
Maybe selling they hear about
a certain drug dealer by the name of, I think it was Heisenberg.
See, what I was thinking was that they were going to go like...
It takes place in the 80s.
Do like a Capone thing.
That's why it's a special episode.
What do you mean a Capone thing?
Like do Capone's story. Like Al Capone, you know?
In Chicago and everything else. I don't know, that'd be a cool like spinoff series to do.
Yeah, kind of like how True Detective does, like different genre, different decade.
Right.
Yeah.
That'd be kind
of
neat.
Like I said, I didn't know the formula of the series.
It's one of those based on true events, but like I said, since they use actual TV footage, it kind of bolsters that. It's like, all right, so you frame this narrative around these events that you know took place, and you actually use actual footage and primary sources for it.
Right. Speaking of things, primary things. I remember why Hope is actually so big. So other than her being the Messiah or the Antichrist, during Avengers versus X-Men, that's like when Cable returned back to the present time to give Hope the Phoenix Force. And then that's when the Illuminati...
Can do that?
Well, since she's a Summers child, she was gonna...
I didn't think though that the Phoenix Force was like a tangible thing.
Yeah, he's like, he just had it in like a bottle.
Here you go, kid.
Drink this.
Well, no, because
hey,
the Phoenix...
Kid, catch.
Because the Phoenix was Phoenix is Galactic's alien space bird, that it comes back down to Earth to possess like the strongest psychic. So that's why Hope became so relevant. And then the Illuminati is like, fuck that shit, and then blew up the Phoenix Force, and then that's why Scott and Emma and Magic and all of them became the Phoenix Five.
Phoenix Force Five.
Literally, they were just
called Phoenix Five. I've seen the picture where it's like Scott holding Captain America's shield, but he's like Phoenixified.
Yeah.
Has the Phoenix Force behind him.
And then he gets the egg in Secret Wars. The Phoenix egg. The last remaining remnant of it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Bet it tastes delicious. Scramble it up. Some peppers, cheese.
Doom killed him immediately.
Because he wanted the egg for himself.
No, he just was like, oh, you have the Phoenix Force. I'm God. And then
what is a god
him.
To a non-believer?
What is a god to a bird? Speaking of other like really cool trailery web series. Sugar Pine 7 returned with their second season. Oh, no, season.
Dude.
I don't know how to explain them. They're like, it makes me wonder, was like losing SourceFed
was the worth, best thing ever for Steven Sutcliffe.
But was it worth Sugar Pine 7?
Yes, absolutely yes.
Oh my god. But yeah, so Steven Sutcliffe, he does alternative lifestyle. It's essentially his version of a vlog. And one of my favorite descriptions, it's about the show's about a documentarian who wants to film a documentary about his friends, but none of them want to be in it, including the documentarian. So it's like a blur between like, you know, hardcore improv acting and then like really scripted segments. Like actually listening to them talk about their writing process is really interesting to me because they try and shoot everything in like a day for a specific bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turn it and cut it down. Like, it's interesting because like they have an editor that they hired and they break down their editing process into three steps. She does part one, Septic comes in and does part two, the story part. And then she finishes the edits and it's like, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's such a weird, like when you first watch it, it's like, okay, this is like a really, you think it's just like a spoof on just vlogs of like, oh, look at these vloggers doing all this dumb stuff all the time. And then it actually starts to build into this whole storyline that they have.
Yeah. If you're curious, like if we were all at work and working in cubicles, this would be our like water cooler talk. It's like, yeah. Hey, did you see the new Septic video?
See the new Sugar Pine?
Screw Game of Thrones, am I right? Kidding.
Kill yourself.
Flee.
Arya will put you on the list.
Flee, you idiot. Jamie Lannister. Run. Leroy! You
fucking idiot.
Janky.
So now you're quoting our friend Robert.
Yes. I just saw his post. And it's so true, though.
Yeah, and
It's so... Sugar Pine 7 is so dumb, but it's so brilliant with what it's doing.
And then there's the most affluential, brilliant character ever in anything.
Alfredo.
Why are you eclectic. So angry?
The man of my dreams, right in front of me, and he disobeys me.
If you're interested in watching it, like, it's so hard to place them into a category because they exceed that genre. And they even talk about in their podcast, Beyond the Pie, because it's beyond everything else, it's like a behind-the-scenes thing, that they don't want to strictly stick to one style. Like, over the last 10 episodes, they got really serious, really dramatic. And really then
cinematic,
they
as they put it,
cut back to like the drama, haha, hoo hoo. Like they, in the latest episode for season two, they try to bury a body, so they blow up a car, but the body's outside of the car, and it's like.
And then they go back to a scene of the guy editing the video for what you're watching, and then it zooms out of him talking to another guy. It's like, oh shit, the body.
It's so interesting to look at this show and kind of like
it's so deconstructed. It's so meta, but it's so brilliant with how it's telling this story they have.
Yeah.
Also, it's like I don't even know. It's like the fact that the fans have all these theories about these characters is the most interesting thing to me.
So Tim Husky, since we got you to watch Riverdale episode 1,
and these are like 3 to like maybe 10 minute videos at most,
go watch. So go on YouTube, type in Meet Sugar Pine 7, and then it should be like a boy band thumbnail. Just watch that video and it explains everything.
That literally starts everything.
Even though it's not the beginning. There's like 77 videos for season 1, and like the longest video is maybe like 10 minutes. Except for the last season finale, which was like 15, 14. Yeah. Other cool things that came back, though. We have a show called Day 5. Which is the apocalypse where if you fall asleep, you die.
The sleep apocalypse.
The sleep ellipse.
Sleep apocalypse.
Sleep ellipse.
Sleep apocalypse.
And it's really jarring to see, like, there's a character in the first season who goes to, like, you just see him crawl into a morgue with a pillow. And I'm like, oh, huh, that's funny because he's a internet personality that I know. And then you sit there, it's like, oh, God, he killed himself.
Like, just died. Nonchalantly walks in the room, looks at one of the characters, like, hey, what's up? Crawls in a morgue container and just falls asleep. Just like it's nothing. Like, Oh, he just essentially killed himself.
And what's even creepier is just some of the ways people keep themselves awake. Like, it's
so
their
much stabbing.
Yeah, it's like their version of zombies in
so many narcotics.
Apocalypse.
So many nails.
Yeah, like they take so many drugs. How have their hearts not exploded?
It's really interesting because we met characters this season who can fall asleep. And they're the villains, and we have to know more.
It's like some cult shit.
Yeah. It really, God, that scene was like,
fuck me, I love a good cult episode.
Yeah. So the first season is actually available for free right now on roosterteeth.com since season two just premiered. And then it is
first week.
Yeah, it's part of this Rooster Teeth's first week to have people sign up for their sponsorship. But I think the first episode for season one is also on YouTube. All you have to do is type in day 5, episode 1, and you should be able to find it. But it's so interesting.
I don't think they're doing that with season 2.
No, see, they are doing it with season 2.
I thought it was just for first week. Could watch the first episode for first week, and then the second episode goes to first quarter.
So the direct quote is that the entire first season of Day 5 will be opened up for the public for the week on RoosterCheat.com. It's the perfect opportunity for everyone you know to binge watch it and catch up on the second season. But they also released the first episode on YouTube way back when Day 5 season 1 started.
And then season 2's, from the director, Josh Flanagan, he tweeted out that the first episode of season 2 will be on YouTube later this week, I think. They're doing the same thing they did with season 1.
Right, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, you can watch episode 1 of season 1 and then episode 2 of season 1 and it's like, well, fuck, if that's season 2, I need to catch up on the rest. It's pretty fucked. Like, the latest episode had me like cringing because
I was at the premiere at RTX for it. I think I already talked about it, but now that they've at least one of them watch it, like hearing people's live reaction to it was just super fun. Even though the scene was quite disturbing.
It was pretty fucked. Like, I was disturbed. I did not want to go to sleep that night because I'm like, oh, if you sleep, you'll die.
But were you down with the sickness?
No. I just had a really weird, like, school nightmare. Like, I know school is approaching because the stress dreams are coming back.
So you could say it was just another way to die. What are songs by Disturbed?
I know. Devin won't go to heaven. I think that was the last Disturbed album I bought was Inside the Fire. Great band. Greg Capullo drew all the album art. Still a great band. And the last big thing that came out recently today was that Netflix has acquired Miller World, all of Mark Miller's properties. But they haven't announced what titles they actually own in Miller World. We know there are 4 titles currently that they're not allowed to possibly use because they have been sold to film studios.
Assuming Kick-Ass.
Yeah, so Netflix CCO Ted Sarandos quoted, as creator and reinventor of some of the most memorable stories and characters in recent history, ranging from Marvel's The Avengers to Miller World's Kick-Ass, Kingsman, Wanted, and Reborn franchises, Mark is as close as you can get to a modern-day Stan Lee. We can't wait to harness the creative power of Miller World to Netflix and start a new era in global storytelling. And this deal will make film, series, and kids shows based on Miller's various properties.
Excuse me, kids shows?
Huck is Fairly Tame.
Isn't it about a guy who can't control his own strength and accidentally kills people?
No, that's Of Mice and Men.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of the same idea.
No, Huck is...
Just look at the flowers.
Huck is Mark Miller's response to Man of Steel. It's like, that's not Superman. This is Superman. Huck is essentially Forrest Gump.
Okay.
He has a list of like good things he has to do. And then suddenly one day his brother appears and it's like, let's go rescue mom. And then they go off.
So it's like a superhero My Name is Earl.
It's like I said, I equate it more to Forrest Gump because Huck kind of has like that very simple thinking. It's like, oh crap, this guy looks like me and he says it's my brother. It must be true. Let's go save mom. And then they travel to Soviet Russia or a Soviet Russian base and everything. But Huck by Mark Miller and Raphael Albuquerque was probably like one of my favorite limited series at Image at the time. It's so fucking good. But it's like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, what properties can they use? Because if they're acquiring just Miller World, that means they have stuff like Chrononauts, Reborn, Huck.
I'd be down to seeing a Reborn series.
Jupiter Circle?
Jupiter's Legacy.
Yeah, Jupiter Legacy.
Invincible. Oh, and that's Robert
Kirkman. Robert Kirkman.
Whoops, might be.
And it's like, and I agree with the Netflix CCO. He is essentially a modern-day Stan Lee, creating all these stories that are accessible to a degree for all different kinds of audiences. But Kids Show really throws me off.
Yeah.
Hit Girl, the TV series.
Oh, God, no. They do, like, Deadpool-size it a little bit, where, like, instead of blood, it's, like, rainbows and unicorns shoot out of people.
I can't remember. There's an anime I was watching. My Bride is a Mermaid, where anytime they showed blood, it was replaced by, like, sparkly water. Like, so if someone's ears are bleeding, a rainbow would shoot out of their ears.
It's Mark, like, well, Miller,
not blood, technically.
In 2013, was recognized by Queen Elizabeth II as a member of the Most Excellent Order of British Empire for his services to film and literature.
What?
So, that's pretty freaking metal.
That's probably as close to a knight as he can get.
Probably.
Yeah. He's just glaring at.
Because I would assume if he was a British citizen, he would have been knighted with that title.
You wrote a story about the Secret Service.
Okay, to be fair, Elton John wrote a song about Crocodile Rock and got a knighthood.
It's true.
So and underneath Icon Comics, which is Marvel's imprint, he has Kick-Ass, Kick-Ass 1, Kick-Ass 2, Kick-Ass 3, Hit Girl 1 through 5, Nemesis. I think that might actually be part of like that Marvel's Rise of the Infamous, maybe. Superior, Secret Service with Marvel also, but those rights have fled far away to a film studio.
Miramax,
yeah,
I think.
Empress with Stuart Immonen. Where the fuck is your Image stuff, dude? Okay, Image, he has War Heroes, I haven't read, Jupiter's Legacy, Jupiter's Circle, Reborn, Starlight, MPH, Chrononauts, and Huck. So, like, of those titles, I'm like, Huck maybe can be a kid series, but not really.
You have to take out a lot. Like, if it's a Soviet base, you have to change it to something else.
North Korea.
Oh, God.
Because every bad guy has been North Korea lately. Let's look at, what's that game? Homefront?
Yes, Homefront.
I said Homefront like three times.
Yeah.
Homefront.
I thought I had a stroke. I honestly thought the mixer was like freaking the fuck out. I'm like, oh God, what's happening?
Front.
I meant to say Homefront, and then I tried to say Homeland, but I kept saying front. But I think I had a stroke.
Is it Homefront?
I think you might have.
Do you smell burnt toast?
Oh no. Let's ask the demon behind you.
Because if so, I need to go get my toast out of the toaster.
Okay. Yeah, Wanted is with Miramax, Kick-Ass is Lionsgate / Universal, Kingsman's with Fox. He worked on Fantastic Four? Why? Fanforstic.
Oh, why?
No.
Oh, no, wait, Fanforstic was probably based on something he wrote.
Oh.
Because Captain America Civil War was also on this list.
So he probably had, like, executive producer credit or something.
Yeah.
Of like, I wrote the original thing. You kind of fucked it up with Fanforstic.
Way to go.
You blew it.
What's Fanforstic? Yeah, okay. He says that he's credited for film adaptations, Ultimate Fantastic Four by Miller, Brian Michael Bendis, and Adam Kubert. There you go. Oh, yeah. And Old Man Logan. That whole thing, right?
Bub.
I'm curious to see what goes on there, because if they do like a Reborn series on Netflix. It's small, it's self-contained, it's fantasy.
One season, you're done.
Yeah, or balls to the wall.
They could just start coming up with new stuff for it.
Or they could do what...
There's a world of possibility.
Yeah, or they could do what World War Z should have been, where it's the small little stories. It's what Black Mirror is. Every episode, is same world.
Anthology.
Yeah. But yeah, Mark Miller's so great, guys.
You know, he's very controversial in the comics industry. He does write some good stuff.
Yeah. All right. So the last thing to talk about. We were at Wizard's Chest. This is when you're in the bathroom. I'm wearing my Blue Lantern shirt as I am right now by sheer coincidence, actually. And this guy's like, oh, Blue Lanterns. Nice. I'm like, yeah, thank you. It's like, yeah. Green Lanterns are the best core, though. I'm like, really? They're a bunch of punks. And he's like, yeah, man. They're the best, though. Like, Hal Jordan, best Lantern ever. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like I said, Hal Jordan's a giant punk. It's like, all right, who's your favorite Lantern? Guy Gardner. He's like, he's a bigger punk than Green or freaking Hal. I'm like, yeah, that's why he's better. That's why I said all the Green Lanterns are punks. And he started talking to me. It's like, man, can't believe they made that shitty Green Lantern movie way back in 2009. I'm like, why are we talking about this? Let me buy my freaking Cobalt miniature figures. And he's like, you know what? Ryan Reynolds is a terrible casting choice. And I'm like, okay, where are you going with this? Should have been Nathan Fillion, freaking Captain Mal. And I'm like, all right, dude. I'm trying to find a way to get out of this situation. It's like, for the new Green Lantern movie, it should be him. And I'm like, I can't imagine Nathan Fillion, you know, as great as he is, he's a wonderful actor. He's a wonderful voice actor for Hal Jordan.
I'll just say, despite the fact that he's playing Green Lantern in the animated movies,
one movie,
he's been
they replaced him. It was just after war.
Thought he was in Throne of Atlantis too.
No, they replaced him. It's in Justice League War, and then Emerald Knights were his two. They replaced him after, but I'm just sitting there. I'm like, how can I get out of this thing? And I can't imagine.
What the fuck was that?
My bottle.
I can't imagine Christ. Nathan Fillion as yoked as like everyone else in the DC universe. So I'm asking you guys here at this table, or three friends gathered around this table, who would be the perfect casting
since
choice
we haven't,
for Hal Jordan?
Since there hasn't been one cast for the new
allegedly
Justice League yet. Yeah, allegedly.
I want to preface this whole talks with Ryan Reynolds was not that bad.
He wasn't. I liked him.
He did. Right. He did what he could.
You can only do so much with a shitty script
that wasn't finished when they started filming.
So and I don't think fart cloud. I don't think would ever be finished because they made Parallax into a fucking fart cloud.
And if you think about it, because we made this joke like 2 weeks ago about the Unite the Seven, and I ran out of people to name, so I said like Alfred and Parallax, but. If the whole concept of the Justice League film, part one, part two, is Unite the Seven, and we've already got Steppenwolf saying no Lanterns, with a capital L, and no Kryptonian, that means at some point we might see a Green Lantern. There's that whole theory that in Alfred's eye at the end of the film is there's going to be a Green Lantern ring. Or that scene is going to be cut entirely.
Yeah.
Like, not today. So it's like, I'm wondering who would be Hal Jordan in the DCEU.
We're just going Hal Jordan, not
just Hal Jordan.
John Stewart.
I was thinking
either, right?
Carl Urban could be good, but I think I like him better as Guy.
Have you noticed that Carl Urban is in every sci-fi fantasy movie? He's in Lord of the Rings. He's in Dread. He's in Star Trek. He's in the Marvel Universe.
He's in Thor.
Yeah, it's like I just realized. I'm like, I'm watching Lord of the Rings. I'm like, holy shit, that's Carl Urban and Cate Blanchett, and they're teaming up again in Ragnarok. But yeah, Carl Urban would be cool.
He's getting a little old for the role, but I honestly think he'd be a better guy than a Hal.
But if he's playing like, I'm playing off you right now. If he's playing like veteran Hal Jordan, warrior of the Green Lanterns, that would actually be pretty cool.
I think that would, like, very menacing. How like I'm here to lead everyone. I'm trying to think of who else could be a good choice from that. That was kind of like the one I went like drew to. I'm like, he would be pretty good there. I'm trying This is a weird one, but Miles Teller as Kyle Rayner. I know this isn't. I'm like already.
He's the guy that played
He was in
Fantastic, right?
Yeah.
And in Whiplash.
Yeah,
the drummer.
Whiplash. Okay. I think he'd be a pretty good Kyle Rayner. Although Kyle is Hispanic, so that kind of whitewashes it a bit. I still think he'd be a good part, good choice for that role.
That's fair, Steve. What do you think?
Because
I have the end all be all. I have the end all be all answer right now.
Do it,
Tom Hardy.
No, I don't see it. Perfect Green Lantern.
Tom Hardy is too wide.
I would say. He's too menacing. He's too
bulky.
But we've seen him because he's able to be that like super sarcastic suave motherfucker. Because in Inception, that was his character. That was before he bulked up. Or even in
This Means War.
Yeah. Or in Dunkirk, he was still like that suave kind of humorous pilot. He's already played a pilot.
I don't know if there's any humor in that movie.
I don't think he would be a good Hal Jordan.
I think he would be perfect.
I think he would be maybe a good Guy Gardner.
Nah.
I just don't see him, or a good Kilowog. I like him better as Kilowog, to be quite honest.
See, I just like because if we're playing with like Nolan and friends, looking at like all of Nolan's work people, and then like Tom Hardy, because I was watching Mad Max earlier today actually, and that's where he is like less bulky. He's more of like the silent type, but combining that character with his character from Inception makes a really unique character.
I think I have one better than Tom Hardy. Chris Pine.
I thought about that.
Imagine him in his Captain Kirk facade.
But he's Steve Trevor. Maybe
that can be a plot point of him coming back of like, oh, you look like someone I knew.
Before he gets shot down in Green Lantern Ring, just flies onto him, and then he gets whisked away to Oa.
Here's a good one.
Half a decade.
How about this one?
Half a century.
James Marsden.
What's he been in?
Westworld?
Okay, yeah. Right, I forgot James Marsden for a second. I'm thinking of the character from Red Dead.
Oh. That's Marsden.
Yeah.
I actually really like that. Because he has that, like, heroic, like, characteristic in Westworld, like he plays that up really like the overall good guy, although he's kind of cocky,
you know. Okay, my second choice.
I really like that now.
Armie Hammer.
I thought about that too, that he could be pretty good
because he was the Russian in Man from U.N.C.L.E., and him and Henry Cavill going at each other, like the really snark level that they had, was perfect for a Hal Jordan-esque character. But at the same time, I'm like, they could go like what they did with Wonder Woman and cast a relatively unknown person, because to most people, Gal Gadot is like, oh, the chick from Fast and Furious? What?
Didn't realize she was in the first couple either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Starting in 4?
No, she's listed in the credits in 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Makes me want to go back
and watch 1 and be like, oh shit, Gal Gadot, you're gonna be Wonder Woman one day.
But yeah, no, like
Actually, maybe Gal Gadot is one of the street racers.
My top two are definitely Armie Hammer and Tom Hardy, though.
I really like James Marsden now.
At this point, Tom Hardy has to make an appearance in a superhero movie. Like, everyone is doing it now. Who's Wasp? And Ant-Man and Wasp. Evangeline Lilly. Like, who's playing Jane?
Crap. Oh, like older Wasp?
Yeah, Jane.
Oh, shit. I am spacing her name.
Oh, she was in... Yeah, she was in Fast and Furious, the 4th movie. Gal Gadot, that is. I'm looking up. One of the... Like I said, the more I started researching this, so like all the rumors of who was playing the Green Lantern, and one person was like, it's going to be Tom Cruise. And I'm like, no, that would be the worst possible Green Lantern to me.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
That's it. Everyone's getting in on the superhero movies. So Tom Hardy.
It's that paycheck.
I mean, Tom Hardy was already Bane, but he was just a man in a mask. So why not put him in another mask?
A poorly covering mask.
Nobody cared who I was before I put on the mask.
And that's all Nolan does to him now.
Put him in a mask.
Mad Max. But yeah, like I said, Armie Hammer, Tom Hardy.
I'm going for James Marsden now. I think he'd be really good. He has a heroic character, like personality that he would kind of like exudes from him, and I think he can like he could steal a scene. I think
my second choice is kind of a weird one, and it would take some work,
Dominic Toretto.
Yes.
Vin Diesel.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Jamie Lannister. Nicolaj.
Oh, Nikolai Rostenko.
It's Nicolaj because it ends with a J. I follow him on Twitter. I should know how to.
Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. I think that's how you say it.
I could see him playing Hal. He's kind of got that charming debonair look. Dye his hair, get him some accent loss.
That means he's dying this season, right? I'm kidding.
I mean, we almost thought it was like, is he gonna? No.
Well, I can kind of see it now that I'm watching more of Game of Thrones.
When does Green Lantern Corps 2020 come out? Hey, yeah, Game of Thrones will be done by then.
Yeah, it's like I said, like, slowly but surely, all the people from Game of Thrones are gonna be like, what do we do now? We've been in these role-defining roles.
Well, and you already got
character-defining roles.
Mophie in the X-Men universe, so
yeah.
Why would not Nicolaj walk over and be like, can I be a Green Lantern in brightest day?
I still want Tyrese Gibson to be Jon Stewart, though. ultimate fan casting.
Earn that paycheck.
I'm campaigning still.
Well, we'd need someone. We'd need one of the lanterns, one of the CGI lanterns at very least, to be Ludacris. They can have it back and forth. Do you not? The witty banter in all of the Fast and Furious movies
is all improv.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. Oh my god! The favorite scene from all of the Fast and Furious is when they're doing the barbecue, and when The Rock walks in, it's like, here he comes. Hide your baby oil. The Rock just improv looks and was like, better hide your big ass forehead. You just see Ludacris spit his beer up, and that was all improv. It's like, best scene ever.
Yeah. If we, and it makes me wonder, like, if we're eventually getting this Green Lantern Corps movie, whatever story that they do, and, you know, they have to show the Corps, it's in the fucking title. Who's gonna be Kilowog now? Because his voice actor passed away,
Michael Clark,
a couple
Duncan.
Of years ago.
He passed away quite a few years ago.
Yeah, like, he's always been Kilowog, and quite a few of the different appearances.
Michael Clark Duncan.
But you need like a really nice bassy voice. And it's like, crap, who can...
Akinbe Mutombo. No, no, no. Not today.
Not in my lantern gore.
Even though you guys are joking about it.
Yeah.
And introducing Akinbe Mutombo as Kilowog.
Yeah, and like eventually in like the future of the DC extended universe, I do want to see one or two movies, assuming Green Lantern Corps goes well, where Sinestro's a good guy. And then the third movie is when he fucks everyone over.
Well, that was supposed to be the original plan for like the Green Lantern movie was, right. It was supposed to be.
Because he shows the yellow ring at the end.
Yeah.
Right?
It shows him going up and getting a yellow ring and it's slowly sliding on his finger. And then it just cuts out before it rests. So it was supposed to be...
My biggest issue with that... there's a whole multitude of issues with the Green Lantern movie, but there was, like, no real lead-up to that other than he just didn't like Hal Jordan.
Well, and that's he disagreed with Kilowog and everyone else, and that's why he left.
Well, and that's what the second movie was supposed to be, was you see Sinestro slowly turning to, well, maybe I will use this yellow ring. Like, after they forged it and decided not to use it, and he's like, we should use it. And then the second movie is supposed to be him slowly going down that path of, well, if no one's going to use it, I will use it. And then the third movie was supposed to be Hal Jordan versus Sinestro.
And let's remember, too, like, Hal and Sinestro were kind of bros. Like, they were rival bros in the comics. Like, wasn't Rebirth. It was the New 52 where they have to team up because Sinestro made a copy of Hal's ring so the two of them can go on an adventure and do stuff. And like, I always enjoyed the redeemable Sinestro. Like, he is a dick who does things to his evil purpose.
He's just an anti-hero.
Well, and that's why I liked him in the first arc of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Mm-hmm. It was him telling the story of when he was a Green Lantern and how what he did to save his planet and then got turned in to the Guardians for it, And then that started him down the trail of, well, they betrayed me. Fuck all of them. And then that led to the Fear Ring.
Do you think Saran Yutsik is also going to appear? And he's going to stare down Superman. And it's like, I let your planet blow up because I was blind for an hour. Shit.
Well, isn't he already technically dead in the Green Lantern Corps?
He's dead right now, yes. Right. But I mean, like, in the extended universe.
I still love that article. Who let Superman's planet blow up?
Well,
it's like that article popped up. I'm like, I thought that was common knowledge. I read that on Wikipedia before I started reading comics. But I think what would be really cool for Justice League, though, is they totally go out of left field. Abin Sur instead of Hal Jordan. And Abin dies during the Justice League
movie. Sacrifices himself to defeat Steppenwolf.
And then you just see the ring fly off.
You know, stabs a spear through the bad guy when he clearly could have thrown it. And it would have had the exact same effect. Minus you dying.
Or giving it to the woman that you just met who knows how to use a sword and a shield really well.
And isn't affected by the
kryptonite. God.
But, I mean, it's Clark Kent. He has to sacrifice himself because that's who he is.
But again, you could have given it to the goddamn Amazon princess who clearly knows how to use battle armaments and is not affected by kryptonite.
It was a heat of the moment situation.
Heat of the moment.
Glad I'm not the only one who went there.
And at this point, I think we should end it.
Wait, no. I have one more important question.
Okay.
Who do you think should play Box?
Adidas.
I was going to go for more Air Jordans myself. But
actually, I think Converse because they're slightly bigger.
What about Heelys?
Since Anna Kendrick can't play Squirrel Girl, she can play Chip. The next best thing.
My God. That'd be incredible.
The better thing, in my opinion. If Miley Cyrus can play a disembodied robot head, then Anna Kendrick can play a goddamn squirrel with a lantern ring.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, yeah. She was in that.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're the original Guardians, whatever they want to be called. Miley Cyrus was the disembodied head.
The Ravengers.
Yes.
Year one. Okay. That's neat. But
now Anna Kendrick for Chip 2020.
I'm thinking of like other characters now. And she can't be Squirrel Girl. They already cast Squirrel Girl.
Right, that's why I'm saying. Warriors. Anna Kendrick for Chip 2020.
She could be Robin still.
She could.
Oh, God. I think it's going to be incredible when you see like the seven. All they had to do like what the super cheesy Avengers thing did where they all lined up.
And like they did the pan around.
Yeah, the swirling shot.
Heroes.
That's a drone. God, I can't wait. That's going to be the ultimate orgasm.
I'm trying to go through the seven in my head. Got Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Cyborg, Hal.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're not counting Jon Stewart or Shazam.
Nah. Unless, like, lineup. The out of left field things that we're going to see Shazam in the Justice League movie. Or we're going to see Abin Sur or something. Like, we're going to look back. We're going to timestamp this and be like, were we right? No.
Absolutely not. Turns out the one who came to save them was Sinestro.
It was actually Alfred the entire time.
They said you would come. A mirror appears. Hopefully you're in time to save them.
He dons the cowl. I'm not Batman, but I can be the next best thing.
What if the person?
Don't worry, Alfred. I'm here. Ezreal. Oh, thank God!
Don't worry, Alfred. Alfred is here. Whew.
We did see a red cape. It could have been Robin.
I said you would come. Golly gee, Alfred.
Still, part of me wants to hope it's Supergirl. I think that'd be really cool. I doubt it will be.
I think it'd just be a little too rushed.
Probably.
Because if they're just I guess if Bruce does find a hologram of Supergirl. And then tells Alfred, oh, BT dubs, there's another Kryptonian. She might show up at some point.
Yeah.
Again, it's like like as much as people give shit to like the Wonder Woman photo from BVS, that one photo does so much to the continuity. Like it's the one tied link between all of the DCEU mythos.
Wait, the World War I photo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you even get to see them take it.
Yeah. Like,
and apparently that was like the first thing that they did. It was like, okay, shit, we have to take this photo. God. I don't know, man. I'm just incredibly excited, and I would not like to see Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern. Again, Booster Gold, maybe.
I was gonna say, I could see him in another role, just not... Yeah. I wouldn't put him as essentially the head of the Green Lantern Corps.
Wild card, Neil Patrick Harris.
Took you so long to get there.
I almost said Patrick Stewart.
Wild card Patrick Stewart.
Neil in Patrick Stewart. In brightest
day.
In brightest day. In darkness night. Because, I mean, Patrick Stewart is already Nightwing in a movie, so why not give it to him? He's not doing sure. anything right now. He's not Dr. Horrible right now.
Is that never going to happen now?
I don't think it's ever going to happen. It's been so many years. I think it's
been like 5 years.
I think they all want it to happen, but...
Well, Joss Whedon now is like, I'm in the DC universe. It was me, Joss Whedon.
That's how he's going to get Neil Patrick Harrison. You have one chance,
Joss Whedon. You have one chance.
Two.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's not really...
He's doing reshoots with Justice League, and then he has Batgirl.
Batgirl's more of his one chance. If he fucks that up, stay away. Stay away.
Yeah. It's hard. It's been 9 years since Dr. Horrible first came out.
It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, we were going to close like 5 minutes ago. It's late.
It's
only 10 and I still have to edit this.
That's fair. Okay. Thank you guys for listening. As always, we wouldn't be doing this without you, because you're a wonderful audience, including you, Tim Husky, because we have to mention you, and you, Jim Bush.
And all the new people that have followed us.
Yeah, shout out to all of you, guys, who want to listen to us for some reason, because I wouldn't want to listen to me.
Wow, way to sell it.
I wouldn't want to listen to me. I would listen to you guys, though.
But you're one third of it.
Yeah, but you guys immediately shot me down after Tom Hardy. I'm like, okay, what did these guys have to say? I'm interested now. I'm invested.
Okay. Fine.
That's the thing. You have to disagree to agree. Tom Hardy, Green Lantern.
No.
No, I don't see it.
It just wouldn't work.
It would work. No. Look at his character from Inception. Hal Jordan.
No.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys for listening. As always, give us a comment, give us a like, give us a subscribe. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes, and SoundCloud, as well as YouTube. All those really cool things for you to check us out. By leaving a comment or review, it gets us put into this magical algorithm that we don't understand and gets us attention.
It helps.
Yes. Also, check out the band Algorithm. They're from France. They're like digital metal. It's pretty insane. And that's a tangent. And we love you, Internet. Good night.
Peace.